Commerce is brought to you by Link. Link makes your customers' post-purchase experience something they love through breakthrough innovation in artificial intelligence. Be sure to stick around to the middle of the show for a special offer. You can visit Link online today at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast. Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And today we have a very special guest from Funko, Mr. Jacob Mattson.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, good to meet you. I know that you and Brian are pretty chummy, but I've only recently met you. Could you introduce yourself to the folks?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm Jacob Mattson. I'm the Director of Digital Innovation and Partnerships at Funko. We are a collectible company. We like to refer to ourselves as purveyors of pop culture. it's tongue in cheek, but really, like, that's what we are. We do a really awesome job at taking something that is distinctively pop culture and distinctively Funko and making it obvious that it's both. That's kind of, I think, the cool thing that we really have nailed is, people can see something and know that, oh, that's Marvel, but that's also Funko, which is a really challenging thing to do with branding. And, we're looking to take that into the digital space with my new role at Funko. So very exciting. My background is on the financial side, actually. So I entered in Funko in 2013. It was a much, much smaller company. We've grown about 10x since I started, actually. I worked for the CFO. He's now, still doing the CFO things, and I am now on the other side of the pond from him doing, innovation and business development, which is really, really exciting. It's an interesting track, honestly, but I think it's interesting. One thing that I will say is, like, I never thought this was, like, my dream job, but sometimes you end up, like, it gets offered to you and you say, wow, that's really cool. I never thought that I would even get the opportunity to do this. And you have to say yes. And so that's, how I got here.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's been such a rocket ship ride, and, I wouldn't change anything about it. It's been great.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I know you, we've had some interaction just because of Cool Blue Web, and, we've been with you guys for what, almost 2 years now, roughly.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, it's been really exciting to see, not really knowing, like, not many people knowing Funko, to seriously seeing Funko everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, yep.
It's like, everywhere I go, if I'm in an awesome office environment, I see, at least 50% of the people have Funko on their desks, which is just amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And if you aren't familiar with Funko, you just don't recognize the name, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. My kids actually got really into collecting the pop Disney characters. So we used to collect the Disney vinyl things, like the blind boxes, and and after, like, the 16th blind box with the exact same, thing in it, I was like, blind boxes aren't so cool. Let's get these other things. And my kids really fell in love with them.
They're really cool.
It's really interesting how I've been having these conversations with merchants on my new podcast. You better go check it out, podcast.somethingdigital.com. It's called Merchant to Merchant. And we've been having these great conversations with merchants. And the thing that retailers care about, it doesn't matter what business they're in, the thing they all care about, that they all share in common, is their brand and the recognition of their brand and how their brand is distinct even from the things that you purchase from them. Bob Schwartz, I guess he was president of Magento for some time, also from Seattle area. He was quoted, he has this great talk that he gives, but his talk, he sort of gives this really great crescendo, and it hangs on the sentence that the brand is the amusement park and the product is the souvenir. And I think that there's no better company that creates products that are souvenirs like Funko. So
it's good.
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, thank you. That's very flattering. I mean, I think, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of such a, you know, amazing, amazing group of people. So it's really cool. I do think you're totally right. Like, you know, the brand is so strong in terms of, you know, being able to identify it. And that's a great quote from Magento guy. I don't even remember his name. See, this is horrible.
Yeah, Bob Schwartz. So like my question. Yeah, speaking of Magento. This is our community, our Magento community, and this is how Brian and I know each other and how we've come to know you. This community is really good at collaborating and sharing. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about your experience in digital commerce today, and maybe what about that experience made you want to push harder to do things that are beyond that experience.
Sure. I mean, there's just so much in physical products, especially, where there's a lot of waiting. And so kind of, you know, when we first launched our very first subscription platform, which was Marvel Collector Core, you launch it and you wait for products, and then it takes a lot of time. What I mean by that is, you know, the procurement cycle to even get these things to consumers is long. So the coolest thing that I think is awesome about digital and Funko and pop culture is that you can now take something that, you know, takes months and make it take hours. Right? So like, I can take a product to market within, you know, a matter of days, instead of weeks or months like we do with physical products, which is really cool, especially because a company like Funko is so tied into like the zeitgeist of what pop culture is. So as we really take, you know, our platform's digital, which is really exciting, it also opens up, you know, markets that weren't available before. Especially as it relates to, you know, viral content and memes and things like that, where they exist for a month or two and then they kind of, no one remembers it again. But, you know, we can really make a connection to those things and those points in time, you know, souvenirs, right? I think that's a great, a great word to use. And that's really cool to connect with our customers like that.
And I think you do. You create connections with your customers. I think they're you know, the sorts of products. What's it really interesting is the product type is extremely important, as much as some retailers would like to diminish the importance of it. They would like you to remember their brand. But the fact that you create collectibles, these are the things that people keep for years, decades. These aren't ephemeral products. But I know that there is a market for that. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you guys are pushing the limits in like digital products.
Sure. I mean, so we actually have partnered with a platform called Quid to actually launch the first 3D digital collectibles on your phone. There's an iOS app that currently exists, an Android app launching soon. And what that is, it's a you know, marketplace. You can you buy digital collectibles. It's stickers, cards, and also, you know, 3D Funko Pops. You know, we have lots of cool content within that, and you know, really that is kind of just the beginning of what you can do with digital. I mean, that's really taking a traditional model that everyone's kind of familiar with in digital, and adding on this 3D layer. And you know, there's the community aspect where you can talk with other collectors, but also, you know, there's a trading and collection aspect to it too. And that's really kind of a really cool part about it. You know, you buy them as blind boxes, right? So speaking of blind boxes, sorry, Phil, that's, that's how you have to buy them. So, you play the odds a little bit, to get the complete set and, or you have to trade. But it's really cool. We've done some really cool stuff. One thing that we did that's actually really cool on digital is we're able to do digital-only variants that you really could never do in physical product. For example, we did a limited edition around the holidays for Star Trek that was literally a candy cane-striped Captain Kirk and actually a couple other characters from Star Trek.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're super cool and, like, you know, very limited. You only could get them that one time. And they sold out very fast and people, you know, loved them, and it's super cool. We can do stuff like that we could never do in physical, or would be riskier in physical for sure. And, you know, people love them. We actually just released Valentine's Day variants as well in a couple of our channels for, what did we launch? We did some Star Trek Valentine's variants. We did some Bob's Burgers Valentine's variants, and we did X-Files. The X-Files one's pretty cool, actually. It has one of them is an alien making a little heart sign with his hands for the X-Files. they're pretty awesome. I mean,
I think there's a lot of people that would love that. Man, that's awesome.
And and part of it is interesting. The people who are collecting on this app, a lot of them are new to Funko. They've never collected physical Funko. It's super cool. And especially in the younger generations, they're less tied to, the physical product. So they don't mind, collecting these things digitally, which is really cool. And it's just a really cool way for us to, continue to deepen our relationship with our customers, for those that are less, less into the physical and just kind of, it's another way to kind of show off the content you love.
Have you guys, actually several follow-ups to that, but have you guys experimented with stickers at all? Like building out a sticker collection for chat?
Glad you asked. Yes, actually. Inside the app, there is a full sticker capability that integrates as a keyboard into iOS. Obviously, the integration into Android will be much tighter just because of the kind of platform restrictions. But the Android app is imminent. We don't have a firm date yet, but we're working on it. I have used it and played with it on Android, for example. It's looking coming along very, very quickly. But yes, you can log in. There is a handful of unstylized, standard type of stickers. But also there is licensed Funko stickers. We did a brand called My Emojis, and actually we're still producing them, where they are little like Funko style emojis. And you can buy those for Five Nights at Freddy's, for example.
Oh, wow.
And that's actually been a really successful brand on the platform as well, is Five Nights.
That's nice. That's how you know you're getting old, because you look at something like that and you're like, I just don't get that. I don't get that at all.
The stickers, I will say the stickers are super cool.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie.
If all the stickers in the world, I like Funko stickers are ones that I would probably absolutely use.
We're constantly working on it. This is really new for us. Trying to get into the space, and it takes a little bit of time with licensing, but absolutely it's high priority for us to create a way for, people to continue to, interact with the pop culture they love. I think it's interesting. I think one thing that we had talked about, as what Funko is internally is it's really about kind of, empowering customer expression through pop culture. Like there's a lot of ways that you could always do that before, and they weren't always cool. Like they were like, oh, let me show you my comic book collection.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, okay, nerd. Like, that's great, man. But it's like, but you go into like someone's house and they have a pop collection. Like, that's so cool. I love that show too. Right. And there's like a connection there that's totally, seems to like transcend, whatever preconceived notions people have about each other. And like, that's really cool. That's really cool. But anyways, yes, we are doing digital stickers. We have some really, really cool features in store that I can't talk about, but I have seen demoed and are amazing. And I can't wait. I can't wait to send you guys stickers.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Delight you.
We are definitely going to have a follow-up interview like 6 months from now, because I feel like you guys, I mean, I know you're working on some really cool stuff that we're not going to be able to talk about.
He has to drop in that he knows and nobody else knows.
No, I don't even know all of the things. No, I don't. But oh my gosh, yeah, I'm excited to keep this conversation running. Sticking with digital goods for a little bit longer, obviously AR and VR, we talked about this a lot on the show, but I like digital goods and AR or VR just seems so amazing to me. Like I feel like that's when the public is going to really start to embrace the idea of owning something that is digital. It's going to feel so much more tangible to them. What are your thoughts on that? I don't know if you can talk about it at all, but like light AR where, you've got your phone out and kind of like Pokemon Go, you're looking at things sort of overlaid on the world through your phone.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, I think AR and VR are absolutely interesting scenarios. It's pretty early. I'm going to be honest with you. It's pretty early. The monetization isn't quite there yet. I think there's really cool stuff happening in that space, but it's hard for us to, kind of know where that is yet. I think the right product will come. It's just going to take time. And what that right product is. I hope we make the right product at Funko. I really do. But knowing what that's going to be or what that's going to look like is really hard. That being said, you know, with the success of games like Pokemon Go, for example, which, you know, I think even as much as it's kind of like, no offense to anyone at Pokemon Go, it feels like kind of a half-baked Pokemon game.
Yes, it does.
By the way, their AR integration is really cool. And like the capturing, it's really a collection app, right? Like, so that's the part where we see it at Funko. We're like, oh crap. Like, why didn't we do this? Like, it's collecting things. Like, that's what we do.
I still don't know why they didn't like do some sort of thing where you like throw the Pokeball out into the street and then your Pokemon fight. I mean, come on. Like, yeah, classic style.
I really like the interaction between players was like, it's very, the gym system is strange. And I'm sure that, you know, they had very good reasons for doing it the way they did it. And I think since the first time I saw Pokemon is like, the thing that immediately goes to is this would be the world's coolest MMO. Like, how does that happen? And I think that was like the promise of Pokemon Go to some extent that was like that everyone was kind of hoping for. And regardless, even without that, you know, kind of killer feature, which by the way, Niantic, if you're listening, like, please do this. I will be customer one. It would be amazing.
Interesting that Pokemon Go is even still around. I thought that was just like a thing that happened in August last year and never again. people still play that? That's amazing.
It's sticky. It's sticky. You know, and it's funny. There was actually a gym inside of our office. That was really funny.
Is that something that you have?
That's so
pull?
Funny.
Do you have pull with that? Do you know the people that you can like pull those strings to make stuff like that happen? I feel like that's something that you could do.
You know, I'm not going to say that I have that pull, but what I will say is being as a part of Funko is you can pick up the phone and pretty much call anyone and be like, I work for this company. And they say, yes, we'll talk to you.
Oh, that's great.
Is insane. Again, it's one of those things where like, once you realize you're there, you're like, how did this happen? This is amazing. And it really, you know, it means that we get really, really cool partnership opportunities and we need to make sure that we take advantage of them, you know, and make sure we do the best that we can with kind of the opportunity that's in front of us. Cause I think there's so much cool stuff in collectibles and digital pop culture that has yet to be overturned. And we really want to, explore those types of scenarios, with partners. And I think, you know, that's what we want to do. That's what I'm driving towards.
Nice. One more thing sort of in the digital goods space or maybe not just limited there, but maybe even something in store, but, holograms. Have you thought about holograms much? I know it's so early, but it's actually not that early in some ways. Building holograms isn't necessarily that hard.
You know, I think there's really, again, this all comes down to like I sound like a crazy capitalist, but you know, I think your merchants appreciate this, right? Like, oh, it comes down to monetization. Yeah. what does it do for you? Like, I think like seeing the coolest thing about the physical products is that you buy it and then other people see it and say, I like that thing too. Like, oh, or where did you find that? That one is so cool. Right. And I think that is that like connection, that like togetherness is super cool. And until you can kind of figure out a way to do that with, you know, holograms and AR and VR to some extent, it's going to be like putting on a VR headset puts you in your own little world, right? Like no one else exists except for you in that world. So figuring out how to make it more like less isolating and more like connected, I think is the critical piece on that. And that will take time and technology and it will happen. I am certain, but you know, until that really occurs, I mean, there will be random use case, you know, random success, I think in that space for sure. But you know, large scale success, I think is really gated potentially by, you know, some crazy like Deus Ex augmentation to our vision or something. Right. Like, I mean, like really like if you think about it, like at what point can, you know, does that reach critical mass? And I think it would have to be something like that. Now, is that possible? Yes. Is it likely? Who knows? I can't say, but it would be cool.
Totally.
That's interesting. Yeah. No, you made a really good point, which is it does come down to monetization. It absolutely does. That's the whole point.
Right.
Right. That's why I think that there's Brian and I have a really good balance, very healthy balance. I think he's always, you know, wanting to see what the envelope can be pushed on the customer experience side. And sure. I like to talk about the things that are more on the enablement side. And so I'm curious, is there anything that you see, you know, from a retail enablement point of view, you know, like we were talking in the pre-show, blockchain or well, how we could just talk about blockchain, but you know, there are more things like the application of AI and machine learning. Those things are interesting from a customer experience point of view, but I think they're way more practical to be monetized from a workforce productivity improvement point of view.
Sure. No, I think you're totally right. I think really, you know, the crazy parts about like, you know, talk about AI and machine learning is at some point, you know, we will have a good enough model of my behavior that I will think about a beer and it will magically appear, right? Yeah. Like that is kind of like, you know, that's like the future state, right? Is that there's a model of my behavior that's so good that it predicts what I want. And I think, you know, that's like the ultimate goal on, you know, for a company like Amazon, you know, like that's on their 15 year roadmap. They're like, how do we do this? How do we just make sure that products arrive at people's houses without them even having to order it? And I think, you know, that'll be super cool. And, you know, to get there. And, you know, they've done some really, really cool stuff. Speaking of, you know, physical, you know, more tangible innovation at Amazon with their Amazon Go experience. But I think, yeah, I mean, to answer that about like new technologies kind of disrupting what, you know, the current like B2B or B2C marketplaces, I mean, machine learning and AI, to be totally honest, except for like, There's some stuff like happening there that like is probably like pretty dangerous for small companies. Mm. I think, to be totally honest. And what I mean by that is like the cost of training your AI is so high,
yeah,
that there's now this massive barrier to entry that potentially only certain companies can even think about. So it'll be interesting to see like if, you know, what someone like IBM with Watson, you know, what they do with that technology, right? Like, do they make it accessible to companies that don't have, you know, can't write a, you know, $1 billion check?
That's so interesting. Actually, we just posted an interview with Amber Armstrong from their Watson commerce team, like just a few days ago. And we were talking about that, and actually they are trying to make it more accessible for the entrepreneur. That's actually something that she really emphasized. They're trying to make it something that people can step into, like okay, instead of trying to think about how you could apply AI to your whole business and come up with something insane, let's find one way that you can apply AI that you know you can get an easy win on, and start with that. And then sort of build on that and start to, you know, slowly transform your business step by step in an agile fashion.
Well, one of those things that I think are concrete that I keep pointing to, and someone's going to make a business around this if it doesn't already exist, but every stock tip I read, every fantasy football recap that I read, they're written by machine learning, you know, algorithms that are mimicking, you know, human storytelling capabilities, right? This is not, it's sure. not real. These stock tips that I'm reading, the stock report at the end of the day, or the interim stock report when a product moves, it's all algorithmically generated. And we need desperately in the merchant space, especially companies that run very, very large dropship catalogs, they desperately need that for content generation. And
sure.
That is the kind of capability. And there are a lot of pre-trained, you know, but I think our audience gets into the weeds with us because they like it. But there are a lot of trained, pre-trained data sets that you can get and you can purchase or license them, especially sure. around image recognition. But I don't know that those things are so appealing to merchants. But if you can tell a merchant, I don't care how it gets done, but we can generate unique content and avoid duplicate content, you know, penalties from Google, I think they'd give you any amount of money.
Sure. No. Well, okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yes, that's true. I think, you know, it's really interesting to talk about like how do we apply these things in novel ways, you know? And I think how it remains to be seen how it will be done. But, you know, I think, potentially the person who cracks that nut, I mean, they're going to have a lot of power and a lot of money. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, you know, as things go. I like to think, you know, one thing that's really cool, I think, about Funko as we kind of work on this, you know, get into a world that's more and more automated, is like that our, like, I feel like our product does a really good job of cutting through that. I don't mean that to like sell it. Like, I really think that there's something really special about, you know, being able to create something that like evokes an emotional response. And again, you talk about the souvenir, right? Like, that's what that is, right? It reminds you of something. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how AI and machine learning come into that space. I think they're pretty far off, by the way, because it's such a soft skill. Emotion is hard for computers, to be, right? you know, like I think I heard a really interesting interview the other day, and I really wish I remembered who it was with. It was, I'll look it up and I'll tell you later, but, there's a great podcast called, 6 Pixels of Separation, I believe, by a guy named Mitch Joel in Montreal. He's a marketing guy. He runs a little marketing firm up there, but he talks a lot about, or he just had an interview with a guy who kind of talked about the downside of machine learning. And he kind of talked about how, like, you know, everyone's kind of goal, like in Silicon Valley. And I think a little bit of this is like, you know, being, you know, kind of centric to like New York, Montreal, whatever, like Northeast, like old money, you know, type of an idea. It's like, oh, they're just trying to, you know, take empathy out of it, right? Over there in the Silicon Valley or whatever. And I think to some extent, like, that is like the magic of what will sustain a brand. And not just Funko's brand, but like, being able to tell your story in a way that connects with people in a way that they like a machine will not be able to for a very long time is going to sustain a lot of companies for a very long time. I mean, I that is the beauty of the stories that come out constantly out of, you know, great studios, you know, like I'm thinking like Pixar, for example.
Right.
Right.
There's so much humanity to it. And I think like really you look at like, you know, speaking of things that are semi-topical, I don't know when we're going to put this up, but Oscars are approaching. Right. And I actually just watched Arrival the other day, and like there's this incredible humanity throughout the entire movie. And I think that's like something that's like really special that we really have to, as technology evolves, we have to understand like, how do we keep the humanity in it?
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to do that in your brand successfully, you know, will keep you, I think, around for a long time.
Yeah, I would
to be alive.
Exactly. I 100% agree. I think that I think if it comes down to what you started this segment with, which is if we could find a way to monetize humanity, that'd be better. That's the key.
How dare you?
Oh man! Actually, so here's an interesting, you know, kind of segue. You know, we're talking about sort of keeping the humanity in things and sort of the story, like the emotion and story and, you know, it really keeping it grounded in experience. In-store experiences, now I know you guys are primarily selling through, you know, your distributors and online. But I've been in your office, and it's quite an experience. You guys have like the craziest, coolest collections and stories to tell, and pinball and all kinds of crazy stuff. And an office is a good example of this. But as we're looking ahead at real change and in-store, and in fact, IBM recently released a study leading it up to NRF about Gen Z and, mm-hmm. and how they're not going to abandon in store. They like in store. They just expect and desire and need different ways of interacting with brands in store connecting with them in a very different way. And so I feel like we've talked about revolutionizing the in-store experience for a long time, but now it seems like the technology is starting to mature to the point where we can actually leverage that technology to tell a more compelling story in store. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that and just kind of see, if you've got anything to add to that conversation.
Sure. Absolutely. I think, the Funko, first off, the Funko office is amazing, and it's, we're moving to a new location, in downtown Everett soon ish, which will be awesome. And along with that, there will be a retail experience, which is going to be also amazing. Yeah. So exciting. I think there's some really cool things that we're doing there, that I think will blow some people's minds. Unfortunately, again, I cannot talk about it. But it will be really cool. Brian, I'll at least get you up there. Phil, unfortunately, we can maybe do like a little FaceTime walkthrough.
This is great. I love that I'm constantly being left out of the cool stuff. That's fine.
Well, we'll get
Gotta make a trip up.
We'll make the trip.
That's right.
We'll make
on a mysteriously nice day.
Exactly. Precisely.
Link is the best way to get your customers coming back to buy again. Link's Cortex AI platform creates rich relationships with every customer at every touch point on every platform. From Magento to Shopify, Hybris and Demandware, over 300 logistic and reverse logistic carriers around the world are integrated with Link. Link brings your brand to where customers are on Facebook Messenger, Alexa, SMS, and more. Let Link add the power of artificial intelligence to your business. For a limited time, Future Commerce listeners can claim an exclusive trial offer for 30 days free of Link Cortex. Sign up today and visit them online at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
So real quick, just to wrap that up, I think it definitely, the in-store is not going away, but it is going to change, right? Speaking of other things that Phil is getting left out of, Brian, have you visited the Amazon store in U-Village?
The bookstore?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fantastic.
Right. Like, I think like what it is, for those of you who haven't visited, is a super dense, like tightly curated collection of books. In fact, I would say it's the opposite of what Barnes & Noble is, which is a sprawling kind of mega store. In as much of it's a bookstore, but there's lots of other things there too. Amazon really is books plus their, first party kind of electronics is really all that they have there. Maybe some accessories. But it was interesting, like they kind of, you could tell that there was, it felt like when you were in the store, there was a lot of thought that was being put into how it was laid out. Which I think was, again, we talk about like a brand being empathetic, right? It didn't feel like, oh, the store was just like planogrammed by robots. Now, in as much as it might've actually been, because I'm sure Amazon was great.
Yeah.
Right.
I love how you said like you started to say 20-year goal for their vision, and then you moved it to 15 earlier in the show, because that really, like, that's how Amazon is. They're like 20 off 15.
Yeah, I mean they're incredible, and it's so great that we are all benefiting from the things that they're doing up here, because there's so much talent, there's so many people doing such cool things. And I think that there's really, in as much as like Microsoft is a core piece of the fabric of this area, I think, Amazon is now supplanted them, which is just another kind of way for us to build really cool stuff and really cool experiences. And yeah, anyways, to wrap up that store experience, it feels like something like different. It feels like a, well curated local bookstore, in as much as it's being made by this mega corporation. which I think is like really the special piece of it and what always gets lost as, you know, I think there's this thing about like going corporate, right? Like how do you scale a business but keep the magic? And that's a challenge. Right. And yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, their engineering folks would probably disagree, but at least, you know, the culture externally, right? You know, that's always been a challenge for every company is how do you keep the human in it when, you know, between your customers and your products are thousands upon thousands of people doing the work. It's hard to do that. It's really hard to do that. And I think, you know, that is, again, we talk about like Funko and digital and how do we keep that magic? I think that is a key part, to, you know, keeping us relevant. Yeah.
And I think it that flies in the face of sort of, we've had a constant joke running through here, but this stuff costs money, right? And somebody asked me the other day at one of our panels for one of the other podcasts that I do, and they said, "Well, how can I be successful in my startup?" And I said, "Well, number one, have money. Number two, don't not have money." Because those are the two keys is from what I can see. But I think you've really hit the nail on the head, which is putting an empathetic design, empathetic experience, and putting the customer back into the first place, right? Instead of conversion in first place, which is, I think, where we are right now. Everything is about basket size. Everything is about conversion. And very few companies have enough vision, like an Amazon, potentially, that have enough vision to say that the experience also needs to be catered to.
Customer experience, baby. That's what I'm all about.
That's right.
Year of the customer.
Year of the customer.
That's every year.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly.
It is. Now we made fun of this on our last episode. yeah. So hey, so we've kind of been rolling here. One thing I want to go back to, and I don't want to miss because I know we could talk about this for a long time. And so let's stop and then switch gears here. Blockchain, like. Let's talk about this for a minute, because I know, Jacob, you're pretty passionate about blockchain, and we talked about it in the pre-show. And I think, you know, first of all, you know, we haven't even talked about that much on the show yet. We've been meaning to since the inception. And so I think, you know, what do you think, Philip? Should we do a little explainifying first? Or
no, I would just say blockchain is the actual technology that makes, alt digital currencies work. You know, the most popular of which that you've heard of is Bitcoin. But it's also the thing that's behind Ethereum, right? And some others that are very popular.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and now it's being applied in all kinds of different.
And every single massive company has, you know, startups and funds that are, you know, looking into applying this technology, in particular, right, to accounting and supply chain, right?
Yeah.
It's right. Yeah. I mean, it's about like now we're talking about, you know, the pieces of like removing the human element, right? It's like how do you like make a, you know, a trustless transaction occur, basically, I mean, you think about something like Uber, right? Like, how crazy is it that there's some company that allows us to connect to people we've never met and they take us in cars somewhere? Like, that's kind of like the initial idea is like decentralizing. It's not like, oh, well, I know that's a taxi, so therefore that's, you know, I can take that car and be safe. It's like, oh, I can just go on this app and, you know, connect in with this random person I've never met, and they'll take me somewhere. They'll take me wherever I tell them to go, and neither of us gets murdered. It's great. So it's really like, so it's that piece. It's kind of
Airbnb.
Like, yeah, I mean, Airbnb is another perfect example. I mean, it's all like kind of, it's around the same idea, which is like, okay, like people, like if you're calling it the sharing economy, like you're missing the point. Like it's not the sharing economy. Like that's what it is today. It's the trustless economy. So how do you?
Yeah. It's the economy, like, stupid.
Right, exactly. you couldn't resist.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So how do you, you know, there's kind of like the massive decentralization that almost like, you know, honestly, like the internet started, right? Is like suddenly these walls come down. Suddenly I can be on the phone with anyone in the world, you know, at the touch of a button. Through a combination of new and legacy networks, which is super cool the way all that works. And then, you know, now you have something like blockchain building on top of, you know, the shoulders of giants, so to speak, right? It's really cool. I mean, you know, there's some really cool applications with it, especially when you talk about like, you know, the hard part is, you know, why do people prefer physical to digital? I mean, there's something about holding it in your hand. And there's also something about like, no one can ever take that away from you, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's totally decentralized. Like no one, like Amazon's not gonna be like, sorry, your license expired. You have to give that, you know, physical book back. But they might do that with a digital book. And in fact, you're buying a digital book is taking a dependence on somebody like Amazon and saying, well, I hope they're still around in 50 years, or I hope that the government doesn't decide to shut them down or whatever. Like, you know, there's kind of some dystopian, you know, I think,
right.
Elements kind of lurking within this that, you know, writers have been writing about for a very long time. You know, in as much as they've, as soon as they could imagine it, they started writing about it. But it's really, how do we kind of decentralize that? And I think, you know, the internet was the first step, and the next step really is blockchain. And what I mean by that is, like, first off, like blockchain, the hardest thing about it is how hard it is to explain. I think I saw like, there's a blog by Fred Wilson, by the way, which is amazing. His website is avc.com, and he loves blockchain. He invests in a ton of blockchain companies. But he had like 90 people. I want to say it was 90 people write a one page, explanation of what blockchain was. And there was 90 different like answers. And some people took like 3 or 4 pages. And there was like probably 10 good ones in the little booklet, also in the link post, so you guys can add that in if you're interested. It was super interesting, but like kind of it's the applications are so like immense. It's like, where do you even start? I mean, I think currency is a great place to start. I think it's kind of a it's like the most classic internet way to start something, which is to basically like be like as disruptive as possible instead of being like, oh, we can use this to like, you know, improve like you could use it with say like email, like quality of email, right? If you send a block, you know, you could use it for spam filtering, for example, right? You know, as companies transact with each other, they gain trust, and then you send these little tokens along with your emails and they're accepted by the router, and then the email gets passed along, right? If these emails come out without these little trust tokens, you know, you would reject them, right?
Yep.
Instead they say, oh, well, what if I were to just like totally just create a new currency? And it's like, by the way, there's like totally, like, I get why there's a need for that, especially like, you know, in countries where it's, well, you know, okay, well, I wouldn't say that necessarily, you know, I mean, we all love the Silk Road. But, you know, like there's real applications where that stuff matters. I mean, like things like, you know, the Arab Spring don't happen without the internet and without Twitter.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And certainly, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I interrupt you.
Okay. So, you know, and certainly, you know, blockchain has the capability to be that disruptive, you know, to the world in a revolutionary type way. I think it's funny that the one we're all familiar with is like the one that like is subject to like the most intense regulatory oversight, and you know, everyone's looking for a free lunch, I think, and maybe that's not fair to blockchainers and Bitcoin miners, but you know, I think there's some really, really cool applications. One that I'll talk about, since we talked about it earlier, was like, you know, there's been talk, you know, at like big accounting firms around the idea of, you know, blockchain associated to financial transactions, mm-hmm. right? So when I transact with another company, we authenticate that through a third party via blockchain, so that, you know, by the time my year ends, my financials, of every piece of information that rolls into my financials have been vetted by third parties. And it's basically my books are audited continuously, right, by the system, which is really cool if you're an accounting nerd like me. So you can literally get, like, you could get in a perfect system financials the day you know, at cutoff, right? Like the bell rings, it's midnight, and now we know how we performed that year. And the world knows, right? A publicly traded company would be able to do this. I think there's some really interesting applications there, you know, massively, I think could massively decrease regulatory oversight, or maybe not, like, I'm not gonna say oversight, regulatory overhead without decreasing oversight, which is really cool too, because there's so many people who are wasting time, mm-hmm. You know, on that type of work, which, you know, I'm sorry if you work in that sector, but, and I don't mean to insult you, but like, there's a lot of people that could be doing really, really cool, productive things that are spending time, you know, ticking and tying things that could be automated. And I think that's the really cool, you know, thing that something like blockchain brings, in terms of, like, you know, taking the trust out of it, because it's every transaction is validated by, you know, the cloud, the swarm, if you will.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the things that I want to point out here is how far reaching this technology is. This has the ability, and we've mentioned a few, you know, accounting, supply chain, and others, currency. But anything that needs to be tracked and verified could potentially be completely revolutionized or disrupted by blockchain technology and made way more efficient.
Right. Well, here's my favorite scenario. Here's my favorite scenario. I'll walk you through my favorite scenario. My favorite scenario is the self-driving Uber scenario, which is I buy a car, it takes me to work, and then it drives, and then it works all day. Because every person that it's interacting with is verified by, you know, using a blockchain type technology, right? And I know that it's picking up people that are, you know, have been validated by others, right? It's about kind of the circle of trust. And so once you're inside it, you know, you can a driverless car will pick you up and take you wherever you're looking to go, right?
In that case, one's even going to own cars. I mean, they're hardly, right?
I mean, you know, potentially the dystopian would say, well, the ruling class will own cars and no one else will. But, you know, like, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm less interested, like, that is, the upside is really cool. And, you know, to some extent, the problem is, the downside is, if you are outside of the circle, what happens? Like, are you not part of society? Like, society can no longer trust you. Are you in prison? Is that what that means? Like, what is that? Like, I mean, you know, this is already happening in China, right? Like, I think they're giving each individual person a rating, and certain people are not allowed to leave the country because they're too horrible of a person.
I think that was an episode of Black Mirror.
Thing.
Yeah.
that was an episode of Black Mirror, yeah. But that also did come out. Like, that was a real thing that was at least talked about, was it not? Hmm. I swear it was.
Interesting.
Now I would feel like an idiot if it was only Black Mirror, but
No, the thing is that's the thing, like, it's that plausible though. I mean, in some way, it's like this, and here's the other thing that I think I really want to point out. This is not just some sort of like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, that may or may not pan out someday. This is being invested in by many major corporations throughout the world and applied in many different ways already. Like, for instance, Walmart is applying this in partnership with IBM, who has actually developed a blockchain technology called Hyperledger Fabric. You know, they've collaborated with the Bank of Tokyo. I believe a rumor, but I believe most major banks are experimenting with blockchain right now and are talking with each other about how they can all collaborate to use it. This is not something that's just some random, you know, oh, I know a guy who traded Bitcoin sort of technology. This is going to be world changing and perhaps the most disruptive technology of our generation. That's quite a bold statement, but it might be.
Here's the crazy part about it, right? So, like, some of this stuff already exists. We talk about, like, the nightmare Black Mirror scenario, right? Where, like, you can't leave because you have a bad rating or whatever. Those actually already exist, right? There's, like, no fly lists. The FBI has a list. But these other lists that, you know, the potential with blockchain, for better or for worse, is that this list exists, like, kind of outside of the government, right? Like, it's just a bunch of kind of servers owned by individuals validating if, like, you're, you know, acceptable to do business with or not. Like, that's kind of crazy. Like, it's, you know, at a level higher than government, which is insane. The banking piece totally makes sense, and I get why they're using it. And I'm actually looking at the Hyperledger stuff right now. That's what I was talking about, I think, earlier about the accounting thing. It's the same idea, which is shared ledgers validated via blockchain, which is, I think, the way that, you know, things will go relatively quickly, at least for Fortune 500 companies. And ironically, again, this is now another wall to doing business as an entrepreneur, right? Which is, well, if I want to do business with Walmart, I need to be on blockchain. I need to be on Hyperledger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually a thing that happens anyway. We call it EDI, right?
That's right.
You know, yeah, we have
true.
That already.
That's true.
We do. It's interesting because I don't think people understand, those types of technologies, the legacy technologies that make business work. And this is, you know, the next generation. And, you know, obviously we'll it's an iteration of that, but with trust built in, right? And I think that's an interesting... You know, that's the interesting portion of it, but I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be tough for us I think this is an enablement technology. It's an enablement technology. Maybe it changes people's lives, but not in a direct way. It's not the iPhone.
Not
right?
in a direct way. Yeah, that's yeah. right. No, it's going to be very indirect.
I think people are treating it like it's, you know, the second coming of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, but it's actually, you know, it's a more iterative and a 20th century version of us creating, it's peer to peer, data interchange, which is, you know, it's an evolution. And I think that's
right.
I think that's really, really interesting and something that definitely fits within the realm of this podcast. I want to mention though, we're heading into, you know, the close. I think we're at 50 minutes. This is phenomenal. Great, great content so far. I do want to mention, you know, we have a tendency to sort of veer toward the dark side. We sort of veer toward the how are these things going to negatively impact us? But can we take a positive spin and maybe think about how lives could be enriched? Like, is this a journey towards, you know, universal basic income potentially?
I mean, the answer is potentially. I think now it's hard for me to see, you know, the good without the bad, right? Because
right.
it's like I think what we said earlier was like, how do you monetize it? so it kind of like it's like yes, but I you know the different like getting to that state requires, you know, a huge sacrifice somewhere along the way by someone, right? I don't see like I don't you know in as much as like. I would love to think that like there's like kind of an altruistic, line behind this. I think there is to some extent, honestly. And I think the currency Bitcoin piece is kind of in that vein, which is like, hey, by the way, because we can do trustless transactions, it enables all these really cool scenarios where people who can now interact with each other who could never interact before.
Yeah.
Right. Because there would be a wall between them, whether it be governmental or, you know, the fact that, we're far apart distance-wise or whatever. I mean, we're all connected. And I think the thing that we – that really the positive is about something like the blockchain tech is really that like everyone becomes more connected.
Yes.
And the more connected we are, like the less it's like us versus them and the more that it is like us, right? And how do we – you know, and that's a very powerful feeling, right? Being able to be like that person is like me, right? And not, you know, especially when we look at like, you know, how divisive things can be, you know, you know, if we just look at like the US election, for example, you know, I think how do we make it more us and less of, you know, of me versus you, right? I think is super important. And I think if someone can figure out a way to do that well with blockchain, I think that is important. And I think that is a way to really validate. I mean, I think there's potentially some really cool stuff around just like, I'm just thinking of like, you know, what kind of elements of kindness could you reward people for if you had blockchain in your pocket? Right. I'm thinking like, you know, are you guys familiar with Steemit?
Yeah. Yeah. The like Bitcoin reward social media platform.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, imagine if you could, like, this is, like, dumb, but, like, you know, upvote what other people were doing. Hey, that person was nice today. Oh, I'm going to upvote this driver in front of me, and they get, like, a dollar or whatever, right? And where you can, you know, lose money if people downvote you. Like, don't drive so horribly, whatever, right? Like, I think there's, like, there's some really cool stuff that you can do because the technology is just there because we're so connected. And the incentive, I think, for everyone starts shifting towards kindness is like the most incredible thing that you could do with something like blockchain. Shift the incentives.
That's good. That's really good. I never even thought of that. That's a great, like, very, very positive thing you could do with that. I think they also, you know, in a very here and now, and, you know, again, monetization perspective, like, this is going to make businesses way more efficient. And that's actually, in my opinion, you know, economy boosting, which is wonderful. Like, it's more transparent as well. Like, for instance, Walmart's going to use it for food safety. So we can, verify, you know, where food's coming from. So I think, you know, the open nature of blockchain is going to allow for people to not get, you know, swindled or get something that they didn't, they don't know where it's coming from, or, transparency in general is a good thing. So I think there's a ton of very positive things that will come out of blockchain. And again, I think Jacob kind of mentioned this, there's a dystopian side, but there's also sort of the beneficial side. This isn't necessarily going to be controlled by any one government. And so for people throughout the world who maybe live in oppressive government systems, this might be a way to, you know, to sort of connect with the outer world. You already talked about this quite a bit, Jacob, but yeah, included that, of course. But I think that's amazing. Tons of positive potential with this.
Absolutely. I mean, I really love this idea, not to toot my own horn, but like the idea of like changing the incentive with technology like this, I've never actually really had thought about that. But that is like, if you can figure that out, like not only are you going to, you know, change the world, but, you know, I think your economic benefits will be pretty strong too. I mean, that will be truly like, I mean, you know, it's a win-win scenario, I think, for everyone. And I would love to be able to, you know, be a part of something like that, right? Like, how do we make that a reality? Maybe that's something to talk about offline. But you know, that's like, that is something that would be truly, truly incredible.
Now that is a good way to end the show. Although before we go, this is something we ask just about all of our other people interview, for all of our merchant listeners, you know, what are some pieces of advice you have for them here kind of in the near term? And then also looking out 5 years ahead or even like 2 or 3 years ahead, what's something they should keep an eye on?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, part of it is like know where your disruptors could be. And I think, you know, that's part of what, you know, building an innovation channel is about, like understanding where your competition is coming from. Easier said than done, by the way. And then the other pieces I would say is like, understand what piece of your business can't be automated and double down on that piece, because that's the piece that makes sure that you're protected from AI and machine learning as, you know, everyone else grows, and everyone will grow and they have bigger budgets than you. So make sure that you understand what those pieces are, so that you can keep your business around for a long time. You know, I mean, I think that's really the piece that becomes more important every day as, you know, we become closer and closer to reality of simple things being automated. And it will mean we have more time to do great things. So let's make sure that we understand what the great things are.
That's great advice. Well, Jacob, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really a delight to talk with you. Can't wait for that follow-up here in 6 months where we get to talk about even more of what you're already doing. I really am excited for Funko. Very happy to have been a part of your evolution. Just generally, this has been a really fun time.
Yeah, thank you so much. And
yeah,
Yeah. Where can people find you online? Where can they reach out?
Sure. I'm not the most findable person online. You can find me on Twitter. Mattson J, simple tweet, Twitter name. Tweet me. Let's chat. I'd love to engage. Or also just ping me on LinkedIn. And I would love to talk.
Yeah. And Funko.com.
Yep, absolutely. Constantly new stuff coming out on Funko.com. Absolutely.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thank you so much. So I'll close this out. Thank you for listening. We need your feedback. We thrive on it. And part of that feedback is for you to go right now, go in iTunes, click the button, go to Future Commerce Podcast in iTunes. Make sure you hit subscribe. And right after you do, give us a 5-star. Make sure you leave us a lengthy review. Want to hear about it. And if you have any questions or feedback for Jacob, and you want to maybe give your input on blockchain or some of the other really awesome topics that we covered today, you can do that on futurecommerce.fm. Click on the episode title, go all the way to the bottom of the page. There's a discuss content box where you can give us your feedback, and we love to get that that conversation started. So until next time, keep looking toward the future.
Thanks.